Morning, Rabbi.
How's it going, Jim?
Good morning.
How are you, Doug?
Good morning.
Good morning, Cal. Okay, so we're up to basically the beginning of chapter 9. So let's read a few of the verses and see where King Solomon is going with his next step. Okay. So he says as follows, for all of this, I have given my heart to examine. And then he repeats the words again, all of this. So note that in the Hebrew, he starts off by saying, ki es kol zeh. Kol zeh means all this. And he says, I've given over to my heart and to search out all of this. Okay, what is it that he's searching out? That the righteous people and the wise men and their students, they're in the hands of God. What's in the hands of God regarding the righteous and the wise men and the students? All the things that they love, things that they hate. A person does not know. It doesn't say what he doesn't know. Again, it's cryptic. And he ends the verse by saying, all is before them, meaning all is before these men, meaning mankind in general. He goes on, and he says, Hakol kasher lekol. All that happens to one is the same thing which happens to the other. He elaborates, there's one occurrence to the righteous person, and to the wicked. They both seem to have the same life. And the same thing applies to the good and to the pure and to the impure also. They seem to all share the same type of life. It doesn't matter whether you're good or whether you're impure. Or if you're somebody who sacrifices to God or somebody who doesn't sacrifice to God. Whatever happens to the good person happens to the sinner. It's a similar lifestyle. A person who swears falsely or a person who swears properly. Verse 3. This is an evil and all that is done under the sun. He brings back that old line, the refrain, I guess you can call it, where he goes back and he says that this is an evil and all that is done under the sun. For one occurrence happens to all. So he repeats what he said in the previous verse, which is questionable. Why does he have to repeat it? He just said that. He was very thorough in his previous verse. But he says it again. But now he joins it with the fact that it's under the sun. All right? So again, so he says, one occurrence happens to everybody, and also the hearts of men are filled with evil and foolishness in their hearts, in their lives, and afterwards, to the dead. That's odd. How could you be full of foolishness afterwards? What does it mean? A person's not having thoughts when he's dead. He's only talking about a person's life. And he says in verse 4, for one who is attached to anything alive, he has hope, because it is better to be a living dog than to be a dead lion. Okay. states, we go back to the beginning. He's stating all this, I have examined that. But what is he, what is it, the subject matter of what he's discussing? He's saying that the, what happens to the righteous and the wise and to all their students, it's in the hands of God. Their love, their hate. The person does not know, but all is before them. Now, there's a few commentaries on this that we need. Right, we'll look at Ibn Ezra and the Sforno. So the Sforno is a very good point. He says, I was reviewing all the trials of the masses, that the wicked and the righteous and all their students, that all of their strivings and their intent, their focus, and their actions, it's still up to God. It's still up to God. As it states, and he very quotes a verse, that means the person still needs help from God to bring about his plans to action. All of his love and his hate, the person doesn't know. And with this, Sforno says, no person will be recognized through God, through any love or hate, from before God, or that he should be assisted in any way, more than what his friend is being assisted. I mean, this is what the person will view. And there's so many variables besides your own abilities. Let's say a person is looking for a job, so you can put so much energy into it, another guy just job lands in his lap. Right? They're very, very typical and not a very uncommon thing. Okay. Ibn Ezra says on this that what does it mean that everything is before them? So he says, all their actions of the righteous people, is not in their own doing, but it's really in God's doing. Even all that which they love, or that which they disregard, they hate, they don't know when it will come to them in their lives. Meaning to say that, what does he mean that they don't know? Right? When he says in the verse, Ein yodeh ha'adam, the man does not know. What does he know? He doesn't know when it's going to approach him. Things that he likes, things that he doesn't. Things happen in the world that affect him, and he does not know. Right? All is before them, and they have no way to sense when's going to happen. Or you can explain this, that they don't know beforehand when it's going to happen. Or they don't know what's been decreed upon them that's going to happen. So he says that there's a lot of unknowns. A lot of unknowns over here. Interesting though, who does he omit from verse number one?
The evil people.
Exactly. Why? Why is the question only? Why is this thing, which is something that's preoccupying King Solomon?
Is he presumably indicating? I mean, it says that the righteous and the wise and their works are in God's hands, but that the works. The evil people and the wicked people and their works are not in God's hands. In other words, they don't have God's particular providence and special providence.
Well, I mean, the next verse seems to be saying that one thing happens to everybody. He does seem to bring the evil person in next.
Yeah, but I wonder if in verse 2, the one thing that he's referring to is death.
So, in verse 1, it's the entire span of life.
Yeah, because it talks about their works.
Now, Sforno does bring it in. He does bring in the wicked. On his commentary on number one, in verse one. But he goes on, Sforno goes on to say, and it's one point, the one I will underline. He says, what does it mean that everything is before them? At the end of verse 1, he means to say like this. He says, in their free will. Meaning, it sounds to me like he's saying the reason why you have this type of a system where there's no real guarantee of an outcome of which way you choose in your life, it's in order that you have free will. If there was a certain exact result that happened repeatedly to the righteous and the wise people, so it would be difficult not to choose that life, because if they're having it great 100% of the time, so then there would be, a person really wouldn't have free will. He would know as soon as he does something wrong, he has a negative life. As soon as he does something right, he has a positive life. See, it could be that this is the design in order that a person isn't, he doesn't see a rule that's happening 100% of the time. So he has to choose the right life because it makes sense to his mind, not because he's looking to have a secure, physical benefits. All right.
There's a real difference of opinions on the commentators around this particular run.
Yeah, what did you find?
Well, Matthew Stavit seems to say that everything is before them, says all these are decreed from heaven before they come about. And it looks like Rashi says everything is before them, and he says before the righteous and the wise, and then they have an explanation, parenthesis, that says, that is, the rest of mankind do not know what causes them to be loved by God and what causes them to be hated, but the righteous and the wise do understand it, and everything is before them.
Okay. So he's saying the righteous, let me see if I can find that Rashi. Rashi says that God, the hands of the righteous, the wise, and their students, God assists them, and he judges them, in order to give them the latter good. And who are the servants that talk about it? Rashi says these are students, that they minister, and they follow the ways of the righteous people and the wise people. And here's your Rashi, you just quoted, also the love and the hate. The rest of the man does not know. And they don't recognize. To give heart to that which is love before God. But everything's before the righteous, meaning before the righteous and the wise one. Meaning to say, in contrast to the previous Rashi, like you're saying. Okay? Again, some static, so if you could just put on your mute button, unless you have a question or a comment. This form definitely is interesting. The fact that he says that everything is before them, but why does he leave that over here? The question I ask: why does he leave out the wicked? Because it could be, very simply, that if the wicked have an evil, that's just, and if they don't have an evil, so that would be merciful. Either way, you wouldn't have a question on God. The question is when you have the righteous, and then something negative happens. That's really what the question is about. Because that would be something which is uncalled for. So that's why I believe that's the wicked are omitted in that first verse. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. Okay. Rabbi, I wonder if part of the issue here is that we see a particular event and we ascribe, oh, that's good for somebody, that's bad for somebody, that's a positive, that's a negative. Like, to take the extreme, I mean, a righteous person, say, is, you know, dies when they're, and we automatically ascribe that with the judgment about whether it's good or bad. But it could be that, you know, for that particular person, that would be the best thing possible for them in the context of the whole system. I'm thinking of, the young person in the early lineage who was taken early, and I believe the commentators, the sages say that, Cal said Enoch. And I understand the commentators say that his life was such that he would not have been able to, I think, stand up against what was in the world, and so he was taken while he was still in a most sinless state or something along that line.
Right, I heard that too. I think we sang that last week, that the person can be taken. But you're right, the person will ascribe a certain value, and not knowing if that's a correct assessment or not. You're 100% right. But what's the thrust of what he's writing over here? The thrust of what he's writing is that there's a notion that he's responding to with people. And that notion is what? What's the overall notion that people carry around that they had that these type of events pose a question?
Would it be that they simply expect that if God's really there, then the righteous will all, drive Maseratis and the wicked will drive tricycles?
Exactly. Right.
The very obvious, immediate rewards.
Right. People want to see immediate response in the physical world to justice. That's their measure of justice, like you just said. And that's what King Solomon's responding to. He knows that people harbor this type of a view. And that's what allows them to, and you'll see how he explains it, how it unfolds. But he vocalizes this. And that's why in verse 2 he says, what happens to one happens to the next person. Doesn't matter whether he's good or bad. Okay, so there. And again, we'll have to understand why he's repeating it in 3, but you see he goes through, he compares, he contrasts the righteous person and the sinful person, and they seem to have the same thing. Now there he doesn't talk about, it says mikra, one occurrence. So it's not death according to Swarmo. It's in their lives. In the form that the assistance, the sworn of God, with these wicked people and these impure people and the sinners in their actions, that happens to them also happens to the righteous person in their actions. And he says, this is all in accordance with the intended purpose for every one of them. Like the rabbis say, greater is a sin that's done for its sake than a mitzvah that is not done for its own sake. He's getting at something. I'm not sure what his point is. But he's not talking about death, or this form at least. Let's take a look at Ibn Ezra.
Rabbi, is there a citation for that quote?
I don't have it here, no. There's no footnotes in the way version here.
Okay.
That's the That is the Sforno 9-2. Okay. Now, Ibn Ezra says, one occurrence will happen both to the righteous and to the wicked. There's no distinction between them, whether a person is good and pure or whether he's impure. Okay. Ibn Ezra. So again, so what the King Solomon is doing is bringing to the foreground the matter, which seems to be we would assume that it would be different. But if you're living properly, so you're going to escape all mishaps. But he says no. And it seems, again, if we're to spoil that, that's done for the sake of allowing free will. All right, so that makes sense. Everything is before them in their free will. Because the good of the real intended purpose from before those who strive. I think we'll leave that alone. Again, it's a number of difficult for me to really translate what he's getting out of here. So let's stick to what I sense a clear explanation. Okay. Now, he says in 3, he does an interesting thing now in verse 3. He says, this is an evil. Now he gives an assessment. First, he just says it's an equal type of thing, an equal occurrence. But now it's labeled as evil. This is an evil of all things that are performed underneath the sun, that one event occurs to everybody. And also the hearts of men are full of evil and foolishness in their hearts, in their lives, and afterwards regarding the dead. So Ibn Ezra, I think we quoted this last week. This, he says, what is the evil that's performed under the sun? Is this, there's nothing more difficult that happens under the sun than this. And that is what? That there's one occurrence that happens to everybody. That seems more like he's referring to death. Sforno takes a completely different route, though. But you see what he says here, under the sun. That's, again, referring to the false assessment, where a person looks at what takes place on Earth, and he doesn't consider that there's something after that, too. So he limits the realm of human experience only to what he witnesses on Earth. And if he sees that the wicked and the righteous are having the same exact desserts for their actions, so that's like the biggest question. But that's what he says is evil, and he also says it because people are limiting it to an assessment under the sun. See, he did it himself. King Solomon just talked about the occurrence. He says this happens to be a fact, and we see this in life. But King Solomon didn't assess it as being evil in verse number 2. But again, it would seem to be here that it's referring to the statement of people. And this is exactly what Ibn Ezra says in verse 4. And because 4 now comes to explain the statement. You see, because verse 4 starts with the word because. Meaning because is explaining why people made the statement in verse 3. What are they saying 4? Because their opinion is, their philosophy is, that it's better if you're attached to life, if you're still alive, then you've got hope. So better off as a living dog than a dead lion. A lion, of course, in life, compared to a dog, it would destroy the dog. So it's the king of the jungle. But that's as long as it has life. Once you take away life from the lion, so then the lion Your reputation is completely destroyed. Without life, it's worthless. Its image is nothing. And this is the opinion that people have, because since they only value that which is living, so that's why it's under the sun. And Ibn Ezra says on this, this is the thought of man, meaning verse 4, when they say that value is only for those who are still alive. He says, this is the thoughts of the sons of man, that they say this, that whoever is attached to life, he's got some hope. So that now explains the previous statement and why it's an evil. Why King Solomon says it's evil, because they're now making an assessment. Whereas to say that because certain occurrences happen in your life, like you were saying, Doug, a person could die young, relatively. He was only 300 or so, Chanoch. And everybody else is living to 1,000 years old. So it looks like it's such a tragedy. But in fact, it was a good. He was taken away while he was still without sin. Because it was be easy for him to become corrupt. So God didn't allow that to happen. And maybe that happens in many cases in our see young people. They're taken away and they're good people. God knows this is the best thing. They reach a certain level there, and they could have been very perfected at that point, even at the age of 20. So we look at it sad and so on, but that's not true. God is managing everything, and it's our loss, not theirs. Okay. And let me see here. Gam living Adam. Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be that 3 starts opening up the answer, because he poses the problem that people will just assess things on earth under the sun, and then he says man's heart is full, is mully rough, full of evil and foolishness in their lives and afterwards regarding the dead. Meaning to say that since they consider death in the way they do, that it's that's it, that's the end. So because of that inclusion of that that false estimation of the existence of man after he dies physically, so because of that they're full of evil. Evil in terms of their assessment. It's all born out of the considerations, their weighing of what's the value of life or death. And since they say only a person who's living has got any hope, so therefore they look at death in a very negative light, and everything really has to be valued, evaluated in terms of what we see here on earth, because that's all they really consider exists. And that's where they come up with their very foolish assessments. All right. All right. Any questions or comments? No, that's not King Solomon. I said that Ibn Ezra says that's the foolish people who say that.
So why is it somehow I learned it that it was that this is what was important?
No, that's not true. Ibn Ezra, I think, is making a very good point. These are the thoughts of man. So verse 4 is a quote from what people say, that as long as you're living, you got hope. So they're looking at life as being the only existence for man. That they're denying the next world, and because they look at life only, so they feel there's a lot of injustice going on, because they see righteous people that sometimes have it tough. So because they say, well, you're only alive physically, and that's it. So they're making an error in saying that God now is unjust, because a righteous person should be having a good life. And since he's not, so there's no justice. But if they knew that God was taking care of them and that there's a whole nother existence, and they might be getting punished for some small thing that they did, then they wouldn't be making such a wrong decision. And they wouldn't assess things, they wouldn't evaluate, you know, justice solely on what they see on earth. See, that's why he says in 3 that this is the evil that's under the sun, because people are limiting their the sphere of all events that they can evaluate. They limit it to just what they see on earth, under the sun. And that's wrong. You don't know that God's going to do more good for this person. And he may just be punishing him now for something. So those are the words King Solomon is quoting the people that have the wrong idea. But he brings it out. He does that. He does it many times throughout the book. He does that in order to bring to the foreground, you know, certain unspoken feelings that people have about justice. And once he brings it out, and he says it, so now people feel safe admitting that they have that feeling. Look, King Solomon said it. But if they study it, they realize he's only quoting a false view in order to show people that it's false. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. But what I learned is, actually, I learned that being alive is a good thing, because then you have the opportunity to make the mysteries that will burn you. It will earn you the next world.
That's right. It was
interpreted by the rabbi I heard speak.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Rabbi?
Yes,
bud. Just, if anyone is interested, that I found in my copy here that quote, "A sin done in the name of heaven is better than a precept performed with ulterior motives," is from Nazir 23b.
Okay, 23b.
23b.
Let's take a look and see what they say over there. Hold on. Okay. So this is a statement by Rabbi Rabbi Nachman, the son of Yitzchak. Greater is a sin done for its sake than a mitzvah that is not done for its own sake. Okay, let's see if we have a commentary on this. Heavy statement, right?
Says Rabbi Nachman B. Isaac said, "A transgression performed with good intention is better than a precept performed with evil intention."
Uh-huh.
So I wonder if that means that if I have the intent to perform the mitzvah, but I perform it incorrectly, in other words, I transgress, that's better than if I have some type of evil intention, but in fact do technically keep the mitzvah.
I would would say it differently. Not that you're trying to do the mitzvah if you make a mistake, but that a person is actually doing, I mean, in form, in action. See, what the question is over here, what's the comparison? And why is there a confusion? So from what you said, it struck me to mean that a person is doing a sin, but his intent is good. So for example, let's say you have a loan. I gave a guy a loan, and he gave me his shirt as collateral. The Torah says that I got to return it to him at night because that's his only garment. But let's say I don't return it at night because I really want to push this guy to, yes, he's lazy. So by holding the garment back, I feel I'll perfect him more, and he'll work harder. So my intent is good, even though I'm doing a sin. So that's better than if I do a mitzvah, meaning the mitzvah meaning the action. Let's say I do an action, some poor guy comes over to me, and I give him the money because not because I want to help him, because I can't stand his whining. He's always whining, let's say, and it's just annoying. So there, I did a mitzvah, I gave charity. But my intent is really what God looks at. And that's what Rav Nachman is saying over here. Rav Nachman, the son of Isaac, is saying that it's true, you have a system of mitzvahs and a system of sins. Now, typically you would look at the action itself, and that's how you would assess something. But that's not true, because if there's a corrupt person, that's what actually God says through the prophets. He says that, what are you giving me all your sacrifices, and what are you trampling in my courtyard or the temple for? Did I ask you for all this? Meaning, God is telling the people that if you're corrupt and you're not defending the widow and the orphan, and you're not helping out people, and all you're doing is you're going through the motions and bringing sacrifices, so God says, I don't want this. So it's actually something which you see God says himself, that the action itself, don't get carried away that because you did an action, and it's the form of the mitzvah, that that's better before God than your real internal perfection. That's what he's saying, I believe. And it makes sense. I mean, God said it too, through the prophets. You have to have a system. You have to have, you know, a formula of actions that people, that have governed people's actions. That's necessary. You can't just have a free-for-all, you know, a Torah system which just says, you know, do what feels good in your heart. People would love it if that's all the Torah said, because that's what people think it says anyway. People always say, you know, God just wants me to be a good person. Well, that's not what he said. Now, that's coming on the heels over here, where he says what? That's in the Sforno, right?
Yes, I believe it is.
Right, that's in Sforno 9.2.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at that again and see if now with that piece of the puzzle, if we can understand, let's read it again. So there he's going on the words in 9.2 that says, everything that happens to one person happens to another person. So he says, all of the levels of divine assistance with these people that it happens to them, and there happens a distinction in terms of their strivings. So this seems to be switched, the different levels that of the intended purpose. Again, it's hard reading. And then he says, one occurrence happens to both the righteous and to the wicked. In the form, that the assistance, I guess God's assistance, right, the divine assistance of these people, of the wicked and the impure and the sinners, that they have things that occurs to them, which occurs to the righteous people. And this is in accordance with the intended purpose for every one of them. And then he quotes this thing, greater is a sin that's done for a good intent, and better is that than a mitzvah that's done not for a good, good reason. So it sounds like he's saying that just like there, you're mixing up good and evil. The wicked person seems to be getting something good. The good person seems to be getting something wicked. So that's similar to the Talmud that says that greater is a sin that's done for good intent. There you have, it sounds like it's a little bit of a confusion. It should be the opposite. How can you tell me that a sin that's done with good intent, isn't it still a sin? Right? That's what we would think. We would think that since it's still a sin that a person does, that's got to be worse than the person who's doing a mitzvah. Who cares the intent? Let's just look at the external action that was performed. So Rav Nachman ben Yitzchok in the Talmud, Nazir, say no. You can't just look at things black and white. So the same thing. So if the person, like we said with the case of the coat, my intent is to help the guy and make him work harder so he can become independent, and this way he won't need charity anymore. So I don't give him the coat back at night, even though that's a sin, but my intent is good, so that's really better. That's really better. And that's similar to when we see a wicked person, but something is happening. So you think the wicked person and something negative should happen, and the good person, right, should have, you know, a righteous person should have good things happening to him, but no, we see sometimes a righteous person, something negative is happening. So Sforno is saying it's the same thing, that don't look at the externals in terms of assessing whether this is just or not. This good person that's having a tough time right now, it might be good for him. It might be a punishment. It might be something that corrects him a certain way. So don't look at the externals. That sounds like what he's saying, and that seems to fit good now. What do you think? So it's a good lesson, though, not to look at the externals. And even though, yes, God gives a system, and mitzvahs are important, but sometimes you'll have a person that's really... the truth is, should he do the sin? No. If you ask me, well, are you saying, is the Gemara, is the Talmud there, Rav Nachman ben Yitzchok, is he saying that a person should choose to do a sin and have good intention? No. In terms of what you tell a person to do, he's got to keep the Torah system. He's got to do the mitzvahs. He's just saying, though, if after the fact you have two of these events that took place, a person did a sin with a good intent and another person did a mitzvah, but, you know, completely with corrupt intent, so it's a good question. I mean, would we go so far to say that the person should do the sin? It doesn't make sense to me that you should say better off to do the sin with a good intent than to do the mitzvah without. What you should do is not do the sin. And in terms of the person who's doing the mitzvah, he should change his intent and make sure it's not just to get the poor man off his back. He should do it like he's supposed to. He gives him money and he spends time commiserating with him, because that's what he's supposed to do. You're not just supposed to give the money. You're supposed to talk to him and console him and make him feel good. So that's really what the optimum is. But, you know, it's bringing out like what God said in the prophets, that the people were coming and they were very corrupt and they would still bring the sacrifices. So God says, this is not my intent, is that you just go through the blank activity without any internal perfection. But people were doing that. People do it today too. You know, that they have to pray, so they may rush through it very quick. So that's not considered, the Talmud and Bracha says that's not considered pleasant before God. If you're just trying to unload your prayer and get done with it so you can get back to work, get back to the office, whatever it is that you're trying to get to. So the prayer that we have to do three times a day then becomes a burden. And the Talmud says, if a person prays like it's a burden they're just trying to get rid of, so it's not considered real supplication before God. See that this idea carries through a number of cases.
So Rabbi, is the sin here that he's talking about like a clear and blatant violation or a miss of an intended mitzvah?
No, it's a sin. Like I said, he's supposed to give back the collateral to the person that he took the loan from at night So he's got something to keep him warm. If he doesn't give it back, that's a sin. That's open in the Torah. Even though his intent is to help push the guy to work harder and to become an independent person, which is a good thing. So that's still, that is a sin.
Okay. I got you. Thank you.
Right.
Because it is this true, that is a simpler approach where people will just look at the action. That's really what's, you know, I'm going through the action. A very simple, superficial type of things. But he makes it clear. He makes it clear that this all comes from the attachment to life. And that's what he says. People say more. And you remember we said earlier, Ibn Ezra says that until verse 9:13, all these are connected. All these verses are connected. You see, he goes on. He quotes the people again. And he says in 9:5, people will say this, that the living know that they're going to die, but the dead, they don't know anything. And there's no more reward to them because their memory has been forgotten. Another statement which is made by the people. And again, so King Solomon is vocalizing, not his view, he's vocalizing the position that people have, what wrong ideas that they're harboring. Where does he say it again? He says it in Zion, in 9:7. He says in 7, he quotes again, this is the people speaking. What do the people say in 9:7? Go and eat with happiness your bread and drink with a good heart your wine. Enjoy your wine. For God already knows your actions. Ibn Ezra says, these are the words in the hearts of men. And this is stupidity. And he says the matter is one. He says of Inyan Acher. And he says another matter is that the dead don't have any portion in the world of the life, of the living. And people will say, like, look how 7 ends. It says, because God wants this. God wants these actions. This is what people say. Why do they say this? Because since the dead don't have any portion in the world, when you are in life, so therefore, go and eat and drink with happiness. Your bread and drink with a good heart. Drink your wine. Because these things is what God wants you to do. You see, this is the position that people have, right? Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. That's exactly where this comes from. The same thing. All you have is the physical, so enjoy it while you're here. I'm sure you've heard that before. But he says this is foolishness. And he says again later on, Ibn Ezra, he says, the explanation that's proper of these verses that are before this and that come after this, right, until 9:13, they're all joined together, and these are all, again, the third time Ibn Ezra makes it clear, this is all the speech of man, not King Solomon. Like man is talking in his heart. And he says, all of these are bodily enjoyments alone, and that's what people want to do. Right, that's the end of 9:8. So three times at least, Ibn Ezra is telling you that King Solomon is vocalizing not his position, but these are the this is the foolish view of most of the masses. And Sforno says this too. Sforno says in his last commentary, I'll read it to you. Yeah, he says, last comment, and it's edited out. Evidently, the editors did not want it in, but the version I have here has it. And this is, I believe it's the end of Tazria. Let's just see. Yeah, so they this. It says in the last sworn of commentary in the Torah, in Leviticus, in that it's 13. 1347 in Leviticus, and he says, now when this occurs to man, and maybe he's talking about the tzaras, leprosy here, he says, when this occurs to man who sins in error, he will suffer pain or loss of his possessions, or physical being, some loss of his physical being, according to divine wisdom, to alert his ear, as it says, quote, God opens also the ear to discipline, and it's a quote from Job. However, those who slumber and are not awakened at all to know any of these things, meaning they don't look at rebuke as an indication from God to get you back in the right way. So he says, those who slumber and are not awakened to know any of these things, these being the Gentiles and the majority of the Jewish nation, except for a few elite Jews. So you see here, he accuses all the Gentiles and most of the Jews. So that was edited out. But this, as you see, the masses are really, they're not educated, they're not looking to learn, and they're just, and he says over here, again, a very important thing. I want to read your Sforno, and he says as follows. He says that 9:3. So what's the evil? All right, the verse also says, this is the evil, and all that is performed under the sun, that one event occurs. Okay, so what does Sforno says? He says as follows. This is an evil, and all that has occurred under the sun. For one event happens to everybody. That one who strives to reach an eternal life with thought and with action, right? That's a righteous person. But he says, nonetheless, this person still needs to strive to have a earthly life too. He's got to eat, he's got to have clothing, right? And he's got to do this just like typical people that just strive after it alone without pursuing perfection. So a righteous person has to succumb to the physical needs and to go after food, clothing, and shelter, just like other people who go after food, clothing, and shelter alone without looking for perfection of this all. Like it says, many people tried to do like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. That's a quote from the Gemara where there were two different views. What should a person do? Should he just learn and not work? Or should he put himself into work? So many people tried to do just the learning and they weren't successful. You can't just learn. If you're not working, then you don't have the food. Then he says also, also the hearts of men are filled with evil. In their lives. Okay, so now he says like this. And with this, there occurs an evil. For those people that are striving for Torah and the good actions, they have to abandon that for a certain amount of time to by force. They have to eat, so they have to work the field. They can't be studying Torah all day long. But what might happen is that they'll be drawn after this physical the seeking of the physical needs, because evil, because man's heart is full with evil. Man has instincts in the matter, and in their hearts and in their intent, he says, and they think that the purpose that's really intended in existence of the intellect is just for the physical. So here he says that there could be a stumbling, that the people who are righteous, that are seeking the righteous life, they are forced to go after some physical sustenance. They might then be drawn to this corrupt life. They think that the intellect is only given for man for the purpose of acquiring physical needs. So there's a danger, he says. That's what he's talking about now. Except for the there's a danger that even the people living the right life, when they're forced to go after physical needs, they may get, you know, drawn into the lifestyle of other people that are foolish. Yimshach gam kein lezeh koko. They will be drawn after this flaw. Since the heart of men is full of evil. The inyan, regarding the matter of the case, that they think that the purpose of the intent, of the existence of the intelligence, of human intelligence, that a person should only use intelligence for one thing, the temporary life. Okay.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Can I go back to verse 7 for a second?
Yeah.
Am I right in looking at Rashi that he's taking a significantly different position than Sephorno and Ibn Ezra? Because it appears that he is saying the verse is to be taken literally by the righteous person. It looks like Mitzvah David has a similar kind of interpretation.
Yeah, he's going a completely different way than Ibn Ezra.
Okay. All right.
It doesn't mean that they're, you know, in conflict. They're talking about two different truths, and they're using the verse to see different ideas. And that's what they say, the 70 faces to the Torah. I mean, there's many ideas. The verse doesn't necessarily have, you know, one idea that can be drawn from it.
And do they hold that that's true for the Torah itself or the entire Tanakh?
Well, Rambam says, I believe in the beginning of the guide, that you may have many verses that just come to teach you one idea, or you can have one verse where every single word teaches a new idea. And that's talking about the Torah, that's enough.
Okay.
Sometimes you just need to have context. There he's referring to chapter 7 in Proverbs, which is talking about the harlot. And it's very lengthy, but it's creating a, it's all to give one idea. All right, so think it over. And we'll pick up next week and see how he continues going. Again, you know, as Ibn Ezra says, it's all, I'm following his lead on this because it really seems to fit. That all these verses are joined together and they're really expressing notions that people have, but he's bringing this out, quoting people's false notions in order that we could unravel you know, some truths and to respond to those notions. All right, any questions or comments before we wrap it up?
Yeah, just number 4. I was just curious as to a live dog better than a dead lion. Is there any significance in dog and lion, or could it be just about anything? Choose anything that's dead and anything that's alive.
Yeah, well, I think because those are maybe the two extremes in the animal world. The lion being like the king of the jungle, and the dog being like the lowest of the low that returns on its own filth. And nonetheless, people say that low dog is better because it's alive than the lion, because he's trying to vocalize he's trying to convey how attached people are to life, despite how degraded the existence is you're talking about. It could have been some other, yeah, it could have been. The real idea is the fact that he's trying to show the contrast, the value that people, they overvaluate life, and they say that death is meaningless. There's nothing afterwards. The Rambam says too, he says sometimes you have a number of sacrifices that had to be brought to the temple, and there are 7. So people ask, well, why aren't there 6? So the Rambam says, well, if there were 6, you'd ask the same question, why aren't there 7? So sometimes you just need to have something to illustrate the point, and the illustration of the objects, the subjects in the illustration, not as crucial as the message. So you need just to have some object. I would say the same thing here. But here, I think it's good, because a lion is looked at as being the leader of animals. And maybe he uses animals because in terms of people, So there's not real that much distinction as there is in the animal species. All right? Okay, so let's wrap it up here, and we'll pick up next week same time, right?
Beautiful. Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Rabbi. Have a great week.
Okay, you too, everybody.